Welcome to the Rabbit Room. I'm Andrew Peterson. For more information about the songs, writers, and artists featured here, please visit rabbitroom.com. Rabbit Room theme song composed and performed by Ben Scheif. For the next few episodes of the Rabbit Room podcast, we'll be hearing those Advent writings from Russ Ramsey, Rabbit Room contributor and pastor at Oak Hills Presbyterian Church in Overland Park, Kansas.
Sarah sat in her tent, grinding grain into flour to make the meal that her husband had requested for the visitors who had appeared. They were more angelic. They were more alien to this land than Abraham himself. And he recognized that the Lord was among these visitors. And in a rush to hospitality, Abraham gave Sarah a list of things to prepare, a meal. Now, she was nearly 90 years old at the time, but still, she got to work. This guest of theirs, the Lord himself, was the reason that they were here in this foreign land in the first place. And she thought about it, and her memories of this were long. She thought of when she was young and beautiful. Even at the age of 65, her beauty was so compelling that Abram thought it best if he lied and told people that she was his sister. Sarai, as she was known back then, she remembered the swell of pride that came over her during that great famine when they had to go to Egypt for food, and her dear husband asked her, "Would you pretend to be my sister, so the Pharaoh won't kill me just to have you?" "It wasn't safe," he said. "She's too beautiful," he told her. Well, what could she say? She agreed, even if it meant that she would have to deal with suitors again. "Better dishonored than dead," they'd say. But the irony wasn't lost on Sarah. She had a secret inside. In the eyes of men, she was alive with beauty. But in this inside place where she would have given anything to be able to sow the seeds of life, she was dead. Her womb was barren, and she was desperate for children. She'd been raised to know it was her honor and it was her purpose to give her husband an heir. But she couldn't. For 30 years, she'd lived this life of a nomad because her husband believed that the Lord was going to give them a son and that through him all the nations of the earth would be blessed. But there was nothing that Sarah could do about it. This would require a miracle birth. For God to give Abraham a son, her womb had to be resurrected to life. And that sort of thing just simply didn't happen. As she kneaded the dough, her mind began to drift again, and she thought of Hagar. She couldn't stand the sight of this woman, Hagar, and her son, Ishmael. And this surge of remorse and anger and guilt came over her. Ishmael was, after all, her idea. She knew that her barrenness wasn't just her burden to bear alone. Her husband bore this burden too. And so with all this talk of an heir and with her inability to deliver one, she wondered, "What about my maidservant, Hagar? Hagar's not barren." So Sarah went to her husband, and she said, "The Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my servant. It may be that I shall obtain children by her. And in what seemed like far too little time, Abram agreed. And Hagar bore him a son, Ishmael. Sarah's words had become flesh, which now dwelt with her. She got what she wanted. She hated what she got. This was not God's plan. And just months ago, before these visitors had come, the Lord had appeared to Abram again. And once again, this meeting was about the same thing every meeting had been about, this promise of an heir. And the Lord God gave Abram a sign that he would never forget: circumcision. This sign that he might remember God's intent, this sign to be applied to the source of Abraham's seed and to every man in his household, signifying they'd been cut off from the land from which they had come. They were now irreversibly separated and consecrated unto God in a holy, lasting way. And the son of that covenant would come from Abram through Sarai. And so specific was this point that it would be through Sarai that during the institution of circumcision, God changed Abram's name to Abraham, from exalted father to the father of nations. But that wasn't all. He also changed Sarai's name to Sarah, which meant princess or royal woman. She would be the one to carry the line of blessing, barren and old though she was. God renamed these two people, not according to what they were, but according to what he would make of them. Sarah heard the visitor ask, "Where is your wife?" "There in the tent," Abraham replied. And then the Lord said, "I will surely return to you about this time next year. And Sarah, your wife, will have a son." When she heard this, well, Sarah laughed. It wasn't just that her childbearing years were behind her. It was that they never happened. This shell of a woman with this wisp of a husband were now somehow going to succeed at something that they had failed at for over 50 years. The Lord heard her laugh, and he asked Abraham, "Why did she laugh?" Sarah lied, "I did not laugh." And the Lord said, "Yes, you did." He knew why she did. He knew why she laughed. It wasn't deliberate. It was half laugh. It was half exhale. Why would God rebuke her for this? The Lord knew her situation. He knew her barren beauty. He knew her surrogate son. This laugh was the laugh of turning away. She had reached her end. But his rebuke, it was like two hands on her shoulders, turning her back to face him. The Lord would not permit Sarah to divide her heart from him. This princess would be his queen, no matter what she felt, no matter what she thought. This one who had the ability to read her mind could open her womb. He knew better than she did how incredible this promise was. In 1 year, Sarah would have a son. 1 year. 1 year later, Sarah laughed again. It was 3:30 in the morning when she crawled out of bed for the second time that night to feed her crying, rosy-cheeked, hungry baby boy. She sat at the entrance of the tent and looked up at the stars lighting the clear desert sky, and she began to count. One. She named the boy Laughter, or Isaac, saying, "God has brought me laughter. Everyone who hears about this is going to laugh with me." God had told them, it's through Isaac, it's through laughter, that your offspring will be reckoned. It was a season of unspeakable joy. They were living among the Philistines as Isaac grew strong and healthy. And though he was still their little boy, when the light was just right, Sarah could look and she could see the face of a man beneath the surface of his smooth skin, and they loved him. And so when Abraham told her about his most recent visit from the Lord, the look of vacant grief in his eyes told her that whatever they had discussed, it involved her beloved son, laughter, and it wasn't good. God wanted what? Abraham was wealthy. He had servants to tend his livery, so he never tacked his own mount. But on this morning, Abraham saddled his donkey alone, because this mission was uniquely his own. Though two young servants would join him, no one would share this lonely, holy quest that was burdening this aging father's heart. He gathered clothes. He gathered wood. He gathered food. He gathered water. He bundled the wood for the sacrifice. And then he went to where he kept his knives. And he looked at them. And he studied the length. He tested the truth of the edge. And he chose one. And it felt hot with purpose in his hand. It was heavier than he remembered. And he put it in the saddle. The journey took 3 days. With two servants and his inquisitive boy, Abraham led the way to a hill outside what would later become Jerusalem to offer up his son. His only son, the son that he loved, the son born of divine intervention. Wasn't this the boy through whom all the nations of the earth would be blessed, the one who would fulfill the covenant that God had cut with Abraham? Had God really sent this child into the world to die as a sacrifice on a hill in the middle of the promised land, in effect killing the promise? If he was to die, Abraham believed God would have to raise him from the dead. Still, for 3 days, with that hill in the distance drawing ever closer, Abraham believed that he would have to experience the sensation of plunging the knife that he chose into the heart of his own son for God. And no amount of belief in the resurrection can ease that. At the foot of the mountain, Isaac takes a quick inventory and asks, "I see the fire, I see the wood. Where's the lamb for the burnt offering?" And his father answers, "God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son." The father and his son, his only son, the son he loves, ascend the mountain alone. And at the summit, Abraham builds an altar and he arranges the wood as Isaac watches. And then he turns to his son to explain what needs to happen next. And with his son Laughter's compliance, Abraham binds him and he lays him on the altar and he raises the knife and he looks to heaven and he looks to his fearful, confused son and his muscles go tight as he lucidly realizes that he is actually about to do the unthinkable. He realizes he does have it in him. He will do this. And just as that blade is about to plunge into that beloved flesh of his own flesh, the angel of the Lord appears, crying out, "Abraham, Abraham, do not lay a hand on that boy. No knife has fallen to the ground faster in all of human history." Abraham looked up, and he couldn't believe what he saw. How had he missed it? Well, he knew how he had missed it, but still there, incarnate before him, caught by its horns in the nearby thicket, was a ram, as if it was sent to this hill for the purpose of dying in order that Isaac might live. Abraham took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. The angel of the Lord appeared again with a word from God. "Because you have done this and have not withheld your only son, I will surely bless you and multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven. And your offspring shall possess the gates of his enemies, and in your offspring shall all the nations of the earth be blessed because you have obeyed my voice." This message was not new. And that, as much as anything, made it ring like a sweet, sweet song in Abraham's ears, because this was the same oath that God had sworn since the beginning. Walking down the mountain with his son beside him, the old man looked back over his shoulder. That place needed a name. So he called it, "The Lord will provide." Indeed, he thought, as he pulled his son Laughter close and they headed home to Sarah.